Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the June 15th, 2021 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. At this time, we'd like to ask those in attendance, please keep your videos off, audio muted, unless you're presenting information or speaking in public comment. Offering translation services for our Spanish-speaking attendees. To access translation, please click on the globe at the bottom of your screen and then the language. At this time, we'd like to ask if anyone who needs translation would please click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and raise your hand. And hang on just a minute. We're waiting for our translator to come on. Yes. We good to go? Okay. So the board did meet in closed session. We had discussed anticipated litigation, significant exposure to potential litigation. We discussed two cases. And we had a conference with our labor negotiators with our agency designated representative, and Kristen Newland, Director of Human Resources, as well as Dan Block, who will be the new Director of Human Resources, regarding employee negotiation, employee organizations, and primarily SLCTA. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? We have a consensus on the order of business? Then we need to move into item 6.01. Public hearing regarding proposed composition of trustee area maps. Dr. Prater?
Yes, this is our final public hearing and hopefully adoption of the trustee area maps, or map, I should say. And I'd like to introduce or invite our attorney, Chelsea Olson-Murphy, to take it from here.
Yes, good evening, everyone. For those community members that have not followed this entire process, I'll give a brief update. So the district's Board of Education is currently elected under an at-large election system where trustees are elected by voters of the entire district. In light of the California Voting Rights Act, on April 20th, 2021, the board adopted a resolution declaring its intent to transition from at-large to bi-trustee area board elections, where each board member must reside within the designated area boundary and is elected only by the voters of that trustee area. So since that time, the board has held two public hearings to gather community input on the trustee area map creation process. The district then published three proposed maps for consideration by the board and community on May 11th. The board then held two public hearings to receive community input on those trustee area maps. And the district then later published three additional proposed trustee area maps on the district's website for additional consideration by the board and the community. So after all that, tonight we are nearing the end of this process. So the board is going to hold one more public hearing on the proposed maps, and they will be selecting a preferred trustee area boundary map as well as an election staggering schedule and adopt a resolution approving the transition to trustee areas. So that will be sort of the final step in this initial process, and then that will be submitted to the county committee for their consideration. And with that, I will hand it over to the district's demographers.
Thank you, and it's good to be with you again. I'm joined again by Dr. Phillips from NDC, and we're here to present the new maps. There are, hopefully you've all had time to look at the maps, and we can, of course, show them in detail. Just to introduce them, though, as requested, there are two maps that the board directly requested last time. Both of them use the orange map configuration along the coast, and then one uses the yellow. Let me get them in front of me. And one uses the green configuration in the city. And so those maps worked out actually fairly close. They took less work by us to balance them in the middle than we expected they would. So hopefully those look as you expected. also, as we were working on it, we came across this idea of Yellow 2, which is kind of a blend of the ideas of the different maps and trying to keep those areas together. And it has, so it takes a different approach, similar to the original Yellow. But one thing it does is blends the coast and the city areas in two trustee areas. And the other thing it does is, I know this wasn't something requested up front, but we did want to present it as an option, as it does keep each board member in a separate seat while doing the other criteria and goals that we had up front. So we wanted to show that to you, so it was on the table. And it's obviously up to the board to decide whether it likes that approach or not, or if it wants to go with the orange and yellow or orange and green. And of course, you can go with one of the original three maps as well. They are still available to you. So we're happy to present these in detail if there are questions about them, and to answer any other questions you might have. Lastly, as Chelsea mentioned, there is the sequencing. Once you choose a map, we have to also confirm the sequencing. And so just to, I think you all are aware, but my apologies, I actually put together the original thing with a typo in it. So my thanks that we're flagged that, and then for Dr. Phillips for turning that around pretty quickly. So hopefully most of you didn't even see the one with the typo in it, but the new one has been on the web for many days and is available tonight. So with that brief introduction, I'm happy to, Dr. Phillips and I are happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, I think that we need to go into the public hearing now. Is that your advice, Chelsea?
Yes, I think that would be perfect.
Okay, so I'm going to open the public hearing for item number 6.01. The public hearing is regarding proposed composition of trustee area maps. And I'll see if there's anybody from the public that would like to address us during this hearing. Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. I'll bring it back to the board for board discussion. And who would like to begin? And I'd like to ask that we not make a motion until everybody's had a chance to weigh in. So, someone like to begin?
Would it be helpful if Doug posted the maps up one by one, the three maps he's discussing?
Would that help the board? I think the board is comfortable with what you've given us. Actually, you know what? As we talk about them, why don't we bring them up at that point? I think that would be more helpful. And let's just go from there. So let's see who would like to begin.
I just have a procedural question at this point. So, Chris, what I thought I heard you say is that we would make a motion. Do we make a motion during the public hearing section?
Well, no, we would actually do the resolution. We would move to, we're actually on item 7.01. which is the resolution number 29-2021, approving the transition to trustee areas.
So we've gone down.
Yes, so we've opened and closed the public hearing, and now we're on item 7.01. Is that correct, Chelsea? I'm looking to you for...
That is correct, and we're going to do what we did kind of with one of the prior resolutions. You know, we've got the resolution, but we sort of need to fill in the blank as far as, you know, which map we're going to choose, and what the staggering schedule is going to be. So we'll kind of get consensus on how we do that, if that's possible, and then we'll, you know, someone can make a motion to approve the resolution.
Okay, so I think just to repeat, what you're asking for is consensus from the board on which map they would prefer to use, right?
And correct.
We'd make a motion, and then we'd make a motion to approve that particular map, and then we would add, then that would become the resolution. And then after that, we, as part of this, then we also do the sequence of elections. Will that be part of the resolution, or is that
so? Separate? The resolution combines both the map and the sequencing. So if we want to first work on the map piece, and then we can work on the staggering piece.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. Okay, does that answer your question, Mark? Sure. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to now open this up to the board for questions to the demographers, board discussion. We'd like to see if we can come up with a consensus from the board on which map to choose, if that's possible. If there seems to be a consensus from the board which map to choose, then we would ask for a motion to support that consensus. Now, if there's not a consensus from the board on which map to choose, the alternative would be after discussion, we would have a motion and a second, we would have more discussion, and then we would have a vote. And the vote would either be up, yay or nay, for that particular motion. So that would be how we would. Okay, does that make sense, Eve? Okay, thank you. So, Eve, would you like to begin?
I don't believe that those of us on the Zoom can hear Eve.
Right.
Eve, is your mic on? Okay. Huh. But guys, could you check in? I'm hearing Eve, but, you know, Eve, maybe move a little bit closer. There you go. That's it.
No, we still can't hear.
Okay. You know what? We're going to have our technical guys look at this real quick to see what's going on, because we're hearing Eve here.
Can you hear now?
Yep. Okay, they're saying yes, they've got you now, Eve.
Yeah, this is just a temporary solution because I stole Ellen's mic. At any rate, Yellow 2 is a very masterful presentation because it makes the election sequencing very simplified with, although it didn't affect me personally, it was concerning, I thought, that you had to decide what you're going to do when and for some of them, and it just didn't look like it was very user-friendly for them. But the drawback to that one is, maybe it's not a drawback, the geographical areas are more of a reach. You know, you're reaching out into other areas to bring in some of that demographic count to get it up. I'm looking at Area 2. You know, it's both coastal and in-town kind of. So that takes me back to the orange and yellow, which I find to be geographically comprehensive. It has geographical areas really well delineated so that they can be easily understood by the public and by us. But I like both those, orange and yellow and yellow too, from the point of view of what I think is good for everybody. I like these. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else would like to comment on this? Well, I guess I'm going to go. I'm going to let Ellen go. Ellen?
I wanted to say that I also, one of the things I appreciate about Yellow 2 is that trustees on the coast reach into town and trustees in town reach into the coast, and so that truly supports an interest of mine that I have always felt very strongly about, in that we all represent all students. And I think in the past, the two trustee areas at times have felt to some that trustee area one is only in town and trustee area two is only the coast. And now it's a much more of a meshing and supports the a personal philosophy of mine that at least that we do represent all kids. So voters on the coast would have an opportunity to, as well as the trustees, to be involved in schools in what were previously trustee areas 1 and 2. They would be more, they would have a greater emphasis of student pops, just student populations.
So I too am very impressed with the yellow 2. A lot of hard work went into that. Not very enamored of orange green. Just the size of two of these districts in terms of geographics is, it's like a small state. And so I'm not really enamored of the orange green. I am very enamored of the orange yellow. I think that it does capture some of what I know that there's some very specific things in the California Voter Rights Act, but in terms of our community, which sadly does not have a lot of diversity, I'm looking then to geographic representation as being a plus. And I'll say this, I think good quality board members will always have in their hearts and in their analysis of things the entire district. But there's going to be times, even with this board, but maybe not, there's going to be times where there needs to be a voice for community. And I don't see that that's detracting. And I think that there's ultimately will be a majority vote, and that will make the decision. So I'm going to sort of lean right now towards orange-yellow because I think there's some preservation, although District 3 is just but there's some preservation of a sense of community in each of those, just geographically.
So, Mark, is your preference yellow 2 or orange yellow, or are you good with? Would you be good with either?
I guess I'd be good with either one, but I will tell you, Chris, right now I'm leaning very heavily towards orange yellow.
Okay. Other comments from Mark?
Yeah. Yes, I too am in favor of the yellow map number 2, and feel like I hope this is what I'm interpreting this correctly is that it seems as though we'll have an equal kind of a population representation by the distribution. I've seen the draw on this drawing, so that so I think this is, makes it fair. And and I like the fact that this particular, I personally like this one because it's inclusive of the both the Cal Poly population as well as the prison population as well as the community population. So it's balanced in that regard. So I thank you for that.
Others?
Chris?
Yeah, Mark.
If there's no one else.
Actually, Mark,
I think that's great. That's what I'm. Thank you.
So, after spending a lot of time looking at all of the maps, I'd originally thought that I would like the orange green plan, but my preference is the yellow 2 plan, for several of the reasons that we've talked about here. The first is that that it does extend the coastal trustee areas into the city, which I think gets to the one of our original requests to the demographers was that we include as many, well, first of all, include as many schools in each trustee area as possible. That was the first thing. I hadn't really thought about actually extending coastal trustee areas into the city, but the more I think about it, the more I would agree with Mrs. Sheffer. I think that by doing that, it eliminates this notion that there are coastal trustees and city trustees. So I really like that a lot too. It works on my interest of making sure that Morro Bay has a primarily its own trustee area that would be shared with Los Osos, but I like that too. It took a while for me to think about some of the ways that it would be split up. But then I really think we're going to have to, things will be split up no matter what we do. And the boundaries, no matter what we do, there's going to be a little bit of wonkiness. But if we, thinking about Los Osos, there's bound to be a split there no matter what. And recognizing that the three trustees who would represent that area will represent the variety of schools for both that and Morro Bay, as well as in the city, makes me think this gives us an opportunity to really work together as a district. And so I'm strongly in support of the Yellow Plan 2 plan. People?
Yeah.
Mark?
May I?
Thank you, of course.
I appreciate it.
Nobody else has raised their hand yet?
I appreciate the comments. I understand some of the rationale. Is it possible to put Yellow 2 up and focus in on the intersection of 5, 4, 7, and 3? Is that a fair request?
Can you do that? Can you bring up the map and
focus? Yes, Daniel, can you do that? Can you share your screen?
You're saying 5, 4, 7, and 3.
Yeah,
it, basically this the city.
And I'm assuming you're talking about number 6 too, or are you?
Yeah,
just think of 5, 4, 7.
Yeah, just, yeah. Yeah, 6 would work. So, and can you? So, if when I look at this, if you can drop the streets in, I don't know if anybody can see that, and maybe even enhance it more. Thank you. So, well, actually, that's maybe back out a little. What I'm particularly interested in is the area 3, and what appears to me to be a fairly forced effort to find populations to make that area work. And it's that little dogleg into the center of San Luis through the Cal Poly area. And so that just kind of stood out to me as, and I guess I need to ask the demographers again, in the heart of the California Voter Rights Act, I think it was, is there a way to put a hierarchy on how we should be looking? So I think part of it was diversity, trying to ensure representation. And was there two others in there that came in?
So I can address that. So the California Voting Rights Act doesn't have any criteria for how the map should be drawn. The California law is simply, do you have trustee areas or not? There are federal requirements, though. And that's, they have to be equal in population. They need to avoid dividing up any protected class populations in a way that dilute their voting strength. And they cannot be racially gerrymandered. So this map complies with all those requirements. After that, it's much more your judgment as to what makes the most sense for the district.
So if I can continue, Chris?
Yeah.
So if this was a city map or a state map, are we seeing less or more of these dog legs, is the best term I can come up with, in District 3?
Well, just to clarify, the cities and counties have a separate California law that governs how they draw their lines. So they have entirely different rules.
All right.
More what works and doesn't work for San Luis Coastal here.
Got it. I appreciate that. So I need to express this. I'll try to just do this. It's my last night. I feel fairly strong about the maps that the district's representing at the minimum a geographic area. Sometime in the future, there may be a need for the coast – to have a strong voice on something in a unified manner. There may be a strong reason for the city to have a voice in a unified manner, and the chips will fall where they may. But in this case, I just don't see the strong voice on the coast, or I see the coast coming exactly what it is, the coast coming into the city from two angles. So I still have a problem with yellow. I think we've spent a lot of time on this. I think the demographers have done a great job. I'm just pointing this out at this point as a small concern.
Ellen?
I appreciate your comment, but I guess I look at it a different, the exact opposite, that the city is having a voice, is reaching into the coast for the first time, and the coast is reaching into the town for the first time. And so that's, you know, that's something that's very, very desirable to me, because I would hope that generally, as it's about kids, that we'll speak with one voice. So rather than breaking it up into where, you know, that's just my view, but I sort of opposite that actually doing outreach together. I have all of us have an opportunity to represent a greater variety of students than I've had the opportunity. And also, I think just with following up just a little bit with some of the maps, whatever we do, some of them do appear to have large geographic areas, but when we think about the distance on Foothill or on Los Osos Valley Road, where there's not a lot there, and Highway 1 between the south end of Morro Bay and the northern end of San Luis Obispo, there's that big gap where there, it's large geographically, but it'll be miles on the car, but not everything's aligned as it should be with number of populations. We've got school districts like Atascadero that reach all the way to the place. It's just covers large amounts of area, but everything as it needs to be occupation.
Board member comments.
I would point out, if I can, Chris, on voter turnout on yellow 2, on the November 2020, the number of people voting is not too bad. 8, if I go across 1 to 7, 8,000, 8,000, 6,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 8,000, and 3,200. And I guess I would need the demographers to explain how, if that's something to worry about or not. But you know, when you go down to the next voter turnout, it's less even in that district. I just don't know if that's something to be concerned about, but it certainly is. So I guess that's a question.
Sure. That's actually
if you can find the question in there.
Yeah. So it's actually a sign of a good map, because one of the goals of the act is to give a voice to, you know, historically underrepresented and to be honest, historically low turnout areas. And so when you have an area, when you're able to draw the historically low turnout areas into one seat, that means they're not competing with high turnout voters that are going to beat them every election day. So that gives a voice to those lower turnout areas where they don't have to compete with a much higher turnout neighborhood.
Help me understand, because I mean, for me, what this says, 2,500 voters in District 7 will be electing a school board member. We don't know whether it's historically, I guess we went down and looked at age, that kind of thing. But it's only going to take 50 plus 1% of 2,500 to elect somebody, as opposed to all the other districts being considerably higher. I don't see how that's protecting a group, other than when I look at the map, it's pretty heavily Sam was, it's pretty heavily kept poly and North Wisconsin. So I'm just pointing it out. Again, I'm comfortable with yellow or orange. I just, maybe you can be more explanation of what group we're protecting with the 2,500 votes.
Well, in this case, as I believe you mentioned, or one of the board members mentioned earlier, we don't have any concentrations of protected class populations where they're going to be even 30% of a seat, much less 50%. So we're not looking at really, and Chelsea, just step in if I say anything wrong here, but this map isn't driven by a need to concentrate any geographic concentration of a protected class.
Yeah. So then what we're doing is we're creating a protected class by giving District 7 this just incredibly low margin needed to be elected. Yeah, I'm just pointing it out. It seems strange to me. I'll go with this. I can certainly live with it. Yeah.
Yeah, just to, so everyone understands, the only way to balance that amongst the trustee areas would have all seven trustee areas having fingers sticking into the Cal Poly residence area. And that would, you know, be just a crazy looking map. So when you have geographic concentrations of low turnout voters, we do what we can as we have here to divide them up, but there's still a limit to what you can do in reasonably looking trustee areas.
Governor Maryland, do you have any preferences or comments?
I'm really fine with the orange and yellow, or the yellow.
Yep, yellow or yellow two.
Yellow two, pardon me. Either one would be fine with me. Now, I do understand what Mr. Schaeffer is saying about bringing the coast into town, and I think that could potentially be beneficial. But I also understand what Mr. Buckman is saying about having a trustee area that has such a low voter turnout. But I don't see how we can avoid that, Mark. I know I'm open to suggestions. I don't know how.
I don't. My understanding is we really can't consider voter turnout. We have to consider population. Is that correct? I'm
yes.
Asking the demographer.
Yes, the trustees have to be equal in total population. Correct.
Evelyn, do you have any comments or thoughts?
Thank you. I could live with any of these maps. Right off the bat, when I'm looking at them, orange and green and orange yellow voters on the coast make more sense because they see it more kind of as a cohesive community of interest. But I certainly understand what Ms. Schaeffer and Dr. Eisendorf Rogers and Mr. Ungo were saying regarding reaching out, the coast reaching out, and the city reaching out, which is really kind of the goal of the governance team. Mr. Buckman, when you were looking at the finger that was going into Cal Poly, I wasn't really clear with what you were saying. Is the issue is that your concern is that Cal Poly is kept intact and it's, I wasn't really sure.
I totally appreciate the question. I'm sorry I was unclear. What it looks like is we needed to capture 6,000 population. So we made the dog leg down into that area. I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm just making an observation. And again, I mean, sorry, maybe that's a question. I'm not a demographer. Is there a reason there's a dog leg on three? that's just so dramatic. So this is on yellow tuna.
Just so we understand the question, so you're asking why does that come into the city at all?
Well, what made the demographers think, what was the cause for creating that dogleg?
Having population.
That's what I'm thinking. But I'm making that judgment. Is there something that made you guys suddenly create a dogleg? Because it's really the first one that we've seen.
Well, I'll take a shot at it, and then Dr. Phillips, you can add anything to it that I missed too. Which the main thing is the need to pick up population. So as 3 came more into the Los Osos area, it was picking up population from 2, and that made 2 have to come into the city to pick up population. So it's really driving, I believe, and Dr. Phillips, correct me if I mistake this or add to it. I believe what's creating that odd shape of Area 3 is actually, number one, Area 2's need to pick up population, and number 2, the goal to divide up the Cal Poly area between as many trustees as we could reasonably in order to avoid having an even lower turnout seat. But Dr. Phillips, add to that anything I missed there.
I think that's right. And we also did consider some incumbent trustee locations. And so if we wanted to have a seat for Ms. Sheffer, we want to make sure that she stays in 5, which meant that we had to take 2 more in this direction in order to pick up the amount of population that we need for that.
Right. That's a good point. Thank you for adding it. Since one of the goals was to separate the 2 trustees on the coast who were paired in all the other maps, it wouldn't have made sense to then pair somebody somewhere else.
So that brings up 2 questions for me, if I may. Number one, the only entirely contiguous area that has a single representative is Morro Bend on the map. And it almost, I'm sorry, please.
Which map are you referring to, Mark?
The yellow 2. So District 1, whoever that is, and if there's a reason or not, whatever it is, it's the only, you've done a great job making everybody else city and town, but in Morro Bay, it's just entirely enforceable, the way I see it. So that kind of goes against what I think we're hearing about trying to make everything not represent an area. And then the second question I have, I thought I just heard that some lines were drawn to protect an incumbent, to guarantee an incumbent the seat. My understanding was that was from the very start, that was not any direction ever to be used in making these maps. So maybe I just misheard some of it, but I think I did hear.
I don't think that anybody talked about that.
I think, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember hearing that. Maybe that's something the demographer said.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Something about the area that comprises Mrs. Sheffer's seat, and let's ask him to repeat what he said with regard to that area.
Well, yes, I mean, as we introduced the map at the start of the meeting, this is something that came up as we were looking at options, and it did present the opportunity to keep each board member in a separate seat. You are correct, that was not a direction from the board, but it is something that's allowable, and it's not certainly not an illegal in any way consideration. So given that we have that opportunity, Danny, you don't need to zoom in on it. Given that we have that opportunity, we wanted to present that for you to consider.
Chris? Yeah, sorry. Thank you. I hear what you're saying, and I understand that it's not illegal. It's what I came away with from prior meetings, especially the very first meeting on this, was we had agreed to entirely to not use sitting board members in making the decision. So I don't know if that's exactly what I'm hearing, but it was interesting that it was called out. And again, I'm just going to point out, Morro Bay ends up with one voice, I guarantee, if it ever came down to it. So, thank you.
My recollection, and I clarify this for me if I'm wrong, is that I think the conversation was about the fact that this Sheffer lives more remotely than everyone else in the group. And so I would assume, and I assumed that that was to capture that remote area as part of the as part of her home ground, because that's where she lives.
So
can I say something?
Yes, please.
Hopefully this work system. So if we didn't capture some people's areas or all of the areas, then there wouldn't be a fair chance of her running again. You know, she wouldn't be able to run if she was left out. So we have to capture the incumbents. We might not have anybody left on the board if we don't.
I think because, help me understand if you can, because of the sequencing of votes, there would always be an incumbent or some incumbents on the board. We would never see all of us wiped, all of us, all the board members wiped out at one time. Do I have that correct?
That's right. All board members would serve out their complete terms.
Thanks.
Right. Talking about re-election is what I was talking about. Yeah, what I'm trying to conceptualize here is that if you don't mind, Ms. Sheffer, me taking you as an example, if the line was drawn so that Mrs. Sheffer is not in any of the trustee areas, then she would have to move house in order to be reelected at the end of her term.
Again, it was my understanding, at least that the majority of the board, one of the instructions we gave was, please do not draw a map that protects board. I can see that there's vacancies. I think you've done a good job. I just was a little taken aback by using that as a term. If I can, I'd like to point out the orange-yellow map again and speak to Morro Bay and the coast, having a variety of representation. The city continues to have a variety of representation. If that's one of our desires, is to sort of put fingers into everything, I personally think orange yellow does a better job.
I disagree, Mark. I think the map that does the best job mixing things up, and that I believe was really our prime directive to them, is to get as many schools in, as many Title I schools in each trustee area, to make sure that there was, and I believe the word we used was balkanization, based on school attendance as possible. We wanted to eliminate that. And although the orange-yellow map does that for the coast, it in a way eliminates one of the coastal seats, where the yellow 2 plan doesn't. I think I understand your concern about Morro Bay, and frankly don't see how Morro Bay can be any different. It's going to be on any plan, simply because of population there. So again, I just want to reiterate my support for yellow 2. Yes.
I think after this discussion, I'd like to state my support for yellow 2 as well.
Who anybody else would like to comment on this? Because if not, what I'd like to do is go to the public. Oh, I'd like to open this up to the public. This is not the same as the public hearing. It is regarding the resolution number 292021. Dawson, do we have anybody from the public that wants to address the public? See no one? I'll bring it back to the board. Someone like to make a motion?
I'll move approval of the map designated yellow 2.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by Ms. Dobler-Drew. Is there any further discussion? Dr. Rogers. Further discussion? Okay, I'm going to take it for roll call vote, please. Roger? Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Shuffer? Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Esmerath Rogers? Graham? Yes. And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. In regards to the election sequencing by map.
Can I ask a favor, Chris?
Yeah, sure.
So I appreciate that we just had a unanimous vote. I would request that somehow the minutes clearly state that there was a lot of discussion.
Oh.
Is that possible?
Chris? Oh, I'm sure, Mrs. Dawson, your usual stellar job.
I would just. Thanks.
Of course. I only.
And if I can just step in for a second, because the board approved yellow 2. Then I think the sequencing schedule is pretty defined, and I'll ask Doug and Daniel to confirm that I'm correct, but I think it would be areas 1, 2, 4, and 5 in 2022 and 3, 6, and 7 in 2024. So if somebody wanted to make a motion to approve the resolution with the yellow 2 map and that sequencing criteria, then we could do that now.
So we already voted on the map itself. I'm not sure if we can go back and re-vote on that or if we need to take a separate vote.
No, we just need to adopt the resolution, and that map will be attached as Exhibit D to the resolution, and then we need to just insert the sequencing schedule. And so the sequencing schedule for Yellow 2 is the one that I just identified. And was I correct on that, Doug and Daniel, on those trustee areas?
So Chelsea, what are you asking us to do at this point? We did approve the resolution for yellow 2.
I think you approved the map, and now we need to have you approve the resolution.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, and just to review then, if given yellow area 2, so area 1 would be 2022, area 2 would be 2022, area 3 would be 2024. Area 4 would be 2022. Area 5 would be 2022. Area 6 would be 2024. And area 7 would be 2024. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Good. So now you're asking us to approve the resolution? Yes?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So let's try this again. Would someone like to make a motion to approve resolution number 292021 with the sequencing, election sequencing as stated? Stolper-Drew?
I make a move to approve resolution 292021 with the sequencing as stated by Mr. Unger.
Second.
Second by Dr. Eisengrath Rogers. I'm going to go back to the public because I think we need to go back to the public at this point. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on this? Seeing no one, bring it back to the board. Is there any further board discussion? Okay, I'll try again. Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers? Mrs. Shepherd? Mrs. Graham? Roger? Mr. Buckman? I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Item or resolution number 7.
pass Resolution 29-2021. Thank you very much, everybody. We really appreciate your help. Thank you. That concludes this discussion, Dr. Crater.
Yeah, and I just would like to say thank you to Chelsea, Doug, and Daniel for their excellent work and collaboration. This is no easy task, and they've done their very best to be responsive to us and the many questions and conversations we've had. And I think they put together an outstanding set of options for the board's consideration. And I just want to say thank you. I appreciate all of your work.
Yes, thank you very much on behalf of the board. This was a long process. I know it's not over with yet, but we appreciate all of your hard work and your creative thinking. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have time. I think we have time to do item 7.02, which is resolution 28-2021, delegation of signature authority. And I believe that would be you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so each year the board, if we have any changes in our administrative team, the district office, we have to go ahead and put together a new delegation of signature authority. And of course, we have a few new members that are leaving and that are coming on board. So these people are able to basically, if approved tonight, are able to sign orders, warrants, contracts, those types of things that the governing board would authorize.
Any questions on this?
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr.
Maybe I won't have questions later on. I'll make up for all the time I'm taking. But I'm not sure. I appreciate the resolution. Can somebody just give me a countdown of the sequence? So if Dr. Prater, I don't know if he's the first person, most powerful.
There is no sequence in order.
So anybody within that's in
this group
list, okay,
can sign. So if there's a check that comes through or, you know, anything, basically, any of these people can. I mean, I shouldn't say there isn't sequence, because there really is sequence. So, especially if, like, any types of contracts or business types of items, Mr. Buck, but those would go to me first to sign. But again, if I was gone for the week, then Eric, or in this case, Dan or Diane. We have large payroll checks that come through, so it's really just any of us. So there are some things that are specific for individuals that would go for first. But really, this allows anybody to sign off on those particular accounts.
So this is one of your, if everything was perfect, it would go by subject category,
yeah.
I guess.
Yes.
And then if that person was gone, then we obviously continue business.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Mrs. Roger?
Thank you. This is something that we routinely do, and these are the same positions that we routinely see and are asked to authorize to have this authority. So given that, I would move to approve Resolution 28-2021.
I have a motion, and do we have a second? We have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any further discussion before I go to the public?
Yes, thank you. So while I appreciate that this is routine, it's a good opportunity, especially for me and maybe for the public, to understand how this is done. We've got, as I see it, 1, 2, 3 out of the 5 are brand new. So for me, it was good to ask the question, even though I probably voted on it 20 times. So thank you.
Very good. I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on Resolution 7.02? That would be Resolution 28-2021, Delegation of Signature Authority. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mrs. Frame? Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers? Buckman? Ms. Dilber-Drew?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Let's move to item number 8.01, Morro Bay Battery Facility Proposal.
I am, Mr. Unger. I just want to take a moment and share my enthusiasm for this recently agreed upon MOU with the City of Morro Bay and Vistra for a battery storage facility, the largest in the, I want to say, in the country. And it's very exciting for the City of Morro Bay. It's exciting for our school district, which we have another incredible business partner. And I just I invited Mr. Brad Watson to come and share some of the information regarding the storage plant with you, as it will have an impact eventually on our school district. And so without further ado, and I don't want to steal your thunder, Mr. Watson, so please, welcome to San Luis Coastal, and thank you for coming tonight.
Well, thank you, Dr. Prater. I hope you can hear me okay here coming in from Texas, as we all do about our 1,000,000th Zoom meeting in the last year and a half. I hope that we're on the far side of this soon. So, thank you very much, Chairman Unger and trustees. Thank you for inviting me here tonight and share some of your evening with you. This is an exciting project, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about it, and then make some time for questions either about the project or the MOU that the City Council approved last week. My name is Brad Watson. I'm the Senior Director of Community Affairs for Vistra, which is the parent company that is proposing to build the Morro Bay Energy Storage Facility. I have sent ahead my proposal or presentation to you before, so I'm going to presume that you've had a chance to maybe review some of it prior, or we'll have an opportunity after to go and drill down into some of the details. So I'm going to try to keep it pretty high level. And if I have permission to share screen, I'll go ahead and bring up a PowerPoint that I just want to touch on and maybe expand on a little bit. And also then we can have some questions. First of all, I want to tell you just briefly about our company. Vistra is a leading integrated retail and electricity and power generation company that we operate in 20 states in the District of Columbia, and that includes 6 of the 7 competitive wholesale markets in the U.S. and retail markets in Canada and Japan. And simply, what that means is that we generate electricity at more than 50 power plant sites, and then we sell the power through our dozen retail brands. Vistra currently serves about 4.3 million customers across 19 states and D.C., through our retail brands, and we offer more than 50 renewable energy plans. Vistra is committed, though, to lead the global effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. As the nation and California transition away from electricity generated by fossil fuels, our company has proactively set a greenhouse gas emissions reduction plan with specific targets: a 60% cut by 2030 off a 2010 baseline, and net zero by 2050. With our carbon emissions down about 40%, we think we're well on our way to hitting our 2030 goal. Vistra believes, though, that we have a responsibility beyond generating and selling electricity, that our company must be a part of the solution for the social, equity, and environmental challenges facing our nation. And that starts with us, our own corporate action, with standing programs, for example, that help customers who are having tough financial times to pay their bills, donating to Feeding America to fight hunger, and even donating a portion of profits from one of our retail brands to charity. In community giving, Vistra is donating $10 million over 5 years to support social justice groups, advancing business and educational opportunities to minority and underserved communities. And of course, millions are donated each year to the local communities where our company facilities are located or where we do business. Now let's go on to California and look a little more closely at where we do business there. California is an important state and an important market for us. You see a couple of our retail brands there at the top of the page, and also our generation and battery storage sites. At Oakland, we operate a small power plant that's to retire soon. And at that same site, we're hoping to develop a new battery storage project. At Moss Landing, just up the coast, we still operate a high-efficiency natural gas plant and recently announced and now have online the Moss Landing Energy Storage Facility. It's the largest in the world. It's now on the grid and powering California. Now let's get down to what we're doing more locally there in San Luis Obispo County. Vistra is proposing a 600-megawatt lithium-ion battery installation located within the northwestern portion of the property of the Morro Bay power plant that retired in 2014. Now, where the battery storage facility would be is the location of what's now known as the Old Tank Farm. The project will occupy about 22 acres of the 107-acre site and would include three new buildings. And to get a sense of the size, this project would hold enough energy to power approximately 450,000 homes. Plan would be to have the new battery facility online by the end of 2024 to coincide with the retirement of the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Generation Station. To accomplish this, we hope that we can get work started on the property in the next year. And here is another view of the facility. That is from the north, really, looking south. And there you see what we propose to be our project in there with the very familiar generation building and the three stacks as well. The battery facility is designed to help California and the Central Coast manage the excess renewable energy that already exists and will also create room for more renewables to be added onto the existing transmission system. The battery is helped by storing electricity and renewable energy from the grid when it's plentiful, like during the middle of the day when the sun's shining. Batteries would then store that excess energy until it's needed when the sun sets. The installation of batteries helps grid reliability and maximize the use of zero carbon sources. The facility is composed of three main components. The first you see on the left there are the roughly 180,000 lithium-ion batteries. They're stored in 7,200 racks that will be located in three low-profile 30-foot-high buildings. The buildings will have screens extending up about 10 additional feet to accommodate heating and cooling. Second are the power conversion systems. They're located around the buildings. The PCS changes from direct current to alternating current, DC to AC, and vice versa. This is required because when we use electricity on the grid, it's in AC, but batteries store power in DC. And there will also be three level substations involved. I'd like to highlight that safety is a key priority for Vistra, the energy storage facility. Energy storage industry, pardon me, is changing rapidly, and Vistra is a leader in design, construction, and operation of these facilities. The facility will adhere to all codes and standards, as well as industry best practices, and we continue to coordinate directly with the Morro Bay Fire Department, city staff, and other authorities. I will just flip through briefly a few pages here of the Moss Landing facility, and I'll give you an idea what it looks like. There are the racks, and you can also, as I say, review some of those details perhaps a little later. I do want to mention, though, because it's something that we feel that people need to know about some of the land use covenants on the property, because for a long time there have been aspirational ideas about what to do with the property at some point in the future. There you see in this slide, in the gray shaded area, the 107 acres in total, and the red inset is where we would have our project. The California Department of Toxic Substances Control is placing a land use covenant on that because it is found in the soil actionable levels of arsenic and also petroleum hydrocarbons. So it's going to restrict the use of the land there to industrial use, which we think is very appropriate for what we're doing. Also, PG&E in 1998, when it sold the entire site to Duke, when it was still an operating power plant, put on land use covenants to restrict the uses there. I'm not going to ask you to strain your eyes because here is the font a little more readable here. Here, essentially, about in the middle of the page are the PG&E restrictions on the site. Essentially, it says that there can be no lodging, hotels, hospital, healthcare facilities, school, daycare center, parks, playgrounds, and other recreational uses. So we know there are some things there that cannot be developed there because PG&E is very clearly, according to the DTSC, assumes all environmental liability on the site up to 1998. Those were the years mostly when it was operating, and it was a fuel oil powered plant. It had solvents in the back that were used in various pits to clean pieces of equipment. So you can imagine there's a lot of chemicals out there. So they place these land use covenants for the soil and also a part of the water on the entire site as well. But just to say that there will be, we think, an opportunity to develop other things there, and that is where our company, we're under no illusion that we have full discretion over the site. We want to listen to the city of Morro Bay and the people of Morro Bay and even the region and San Luis Obispo County, certainly the school district, and get a lot of input on what should go down there at this very important portion of Morro Bay. And I'll just wrap up real quickly. You can see here how some of the area has been carved up for various land uses over time. And here's more of a detailed list of how the 107 acres has been used. I will note at the bottom that the Pacific Wildlife Care and also Marine Mammal Center are still operating there on site. So with that, I will stop sharing, entertain any questions, respectful of your time.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great presentation. Looks like a great use for our that area in many ways. But I have a three-part question. The first one is, I thought the stack, there was some talk about possible stack removal, but you say there's three stacks. So will they be rebuilt, or are they going to stay, or
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you can answer that, and then I just have a two follow-up questions.
Yes, and that's a good question. And I think even though our company is really excited about the project, public attention is focused on the stacks because they've been a landmark there, although one built by humanity, not Morro Rock, for so long. And opinions are divided about the stacks. But what you're referring to is a memorandum of understanding that the city of Morro Bay, the city council approved recently, and that we certainly signed on to, which does a couple of things, one of which is commit our company at its own expense to demolish the power generation building where the boilers and all of the generation equipment was housed. And we'd also propose to demolish the stacks unless the city of Morro Bay gives us notice by the end of 2022 that they want to keep the stacks. Clearly, the city staff and the council understand that there are differing opinions about that. And so they're going to have a robust public discussion about that. And when they decide what to do, they'll let us know. If they say we want to keep the stacks, then they won't be demolished.
Thank you. And as far as the buildings, I understand they're low profile, 32 feet high, I think you said, but also concerned that it's not a dead zone, a low, flat zone that takes up a lot of space without any kind of natural relief. So I was wondering, is there going to be a lot of tree removal? Will there be an architectural masterpiece there, a land architectural masterpiece of trees and landscaping? What will happen?
Well, our goal is to make the buildings as unobtrusive and as possible. Right now, there are trees and there is foliage along there, along the Embarcadero there on that side that faces really Morro Rock. We can look at putting additional landscape in, but I'll also say that the tank farm where we propose to build the battery storage system is surrounded by about a 20-foot high berm that was used for containment. These were fuel oil tanks back in the day. And so the site will be there, and that berm really obscures much of what we're proposing to build. So we hope that the buildings, and think data center when you're thinking about these buildings, they're very low rise, are going to be unobtrusive, and 30 feet tall. If we have to put any air conditioning units and so forth on them, it might be a 10 feet taller with some screening, but we're going to keep them low profile and not blocking beautiful vision either way, either from the water or from the coast.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions from the board? I think Mrs. Roger and then Mrs. Shepherd.
Thank you. I guess my first question would be, there there's sort of ongoing dialogue on the coast. I live in Los Osos, which is on the southern end of Morro Bay, but I'm aware of a lot of conversation having to do with the stacks, the pros and cons of the stacks. And I've been reading that they are asbestos lined, that there is asbestos in the buildings currently, but also yes. in the stacks. Can you comment on that?
Yes, there's definitely asbestos in the power generation building. And I don't know all the details as far as exactly what is on the inside of the stacks. I could perhaps get that to you. There may be a report coming on that. But I certainly within the generation building, that will have to be remediated. Whether the building were kept or whether it were torn down, and it will be costly. It will be very costly, in fact, millions and millions. And that's something that we'll have to take care of. Should the stacks be taken down, they would not be imploded. They would be taken down from the top down.
Thank you. And then my second question, since I noticed you said millions and millions, I hope that you understand that we are a low wealth basic aid school district, relying primarily on property and unitary taxes as our funding source, and educating the students of Morro Bay. So I wonder if you have any estimate at this time of the value of that property once developed.
Yes, it's in the presentation. It's on one of the pages, but it's in there. We had our tax and finance people, our tax attorneys look at this because, yes, this is a substantial capital investment by our company in the community. Right now, last year, 2020 paid into 2021. The site as it sits now, all 107 acres, paid to San Luis Obispo County in total $290,000, which 38% roughly goes to the school district. We are proposing at a conservative level to invest north of $500 million for this project, could be higher, which we estimate conservatively would raise that annual payment to $4.8 million annually. So, and I've been asked this question before, how does that proportionality work for the various taxing entities? And it tracks pretty closely. So, I mean, you can do the quick arithmetic to see what the increase would be in an annual property tax payment to San Luis Coastal.
I can, but I think I have a CBO that's already doing those calculations for me.
I would guess they probably have done those calculations before tonight.
I hope I don't appear avaricious in asking the question. Thank you.
Not at all. We own, like I said in my presentation, we own more than 50 power plants. These are substantial capital investments in communities. But we also want to make sure that we invest in communities in other ways. And we are dedicated to do that. So we're members of the community. We're corporate citizens. And we're going to pay our fair share of taxes. And we completely understand that. But we're delighted at the opportunity to invest here.
Strong personal interest, as I know other board members do, in stemming the tide of climate change and in producing green energy. So I'm very interested in this project going forward.
But Marilyn, I'm not a math head, but if I took about 38% of $4.8 million, that's about $1,824,000.
I'll take that. And
does that sound about right, Mr. Pinkerton?
Well, I will say, since one of the first things I did, because we get these questions all the time, was ask the tax office in the county for a breakout and
$1.8 million.
But we paid just with a retired power plant site sitting there like it is now, inert. Your payment was $103,000.
Well, significant difference there. Thank you very much for your presentation.
You're welcome. If I could also add just very quickly, we view this as a resource for your students too. There are going to be some wonderful green energy jobs in the future. Probably we haven't even thought of yet. But we want to harness the interest in STEM, especially among young women, because they begin to lose interest at 7th, 8th grade. And we would like to make sure that students have an opportunity to come out and see this facility, see its importance in how our nation and California are transitioning from fossil to renewable energy, and how battery storage is important in that, to key their interest on these kinds of jobs and technology, work with the school district in curriculum, site visits, and that kind of thing, which we would be interested in doing to spur that interest. So it's right there in their community. They can come see it.
You know, we have an active San Luis Coastal Educational Foundation that shares your interest in STEM education, and I'm sure they would be very happy to speak with you at any time.
Okay.
Thank you. I just have a very brief question. It's my understanding from looking at the list and from reading the paper that the city of Morro Bay has already expressed their support of this project. Is that correct at a city council meeting?
No. What they did was they approved a memorandum of understanding that resolved a number of outstanding issues. Among them were what to do with the generation building and the power plant stacks, but also there was pending litigation that the city brought, an eminent domain lawsuit that the city had brought regarding a property it needed for various water lines and injection wells on the site for the water reclamation facility. So the memorandum of understanding resolved that. That's what was approved. We have submitted at this time applications for permits to build the project. The project right now is going through the CEQA process, which is going to take many months, which is a very methodical set of regulations. And there's been no approval of the project by the city, and Mayor Heading and City Manager Collins have been explicit in making sure people know that it has not been approved in any way.
Thank you. I didn't mean to misspeak. I was thinking of the MOU, so you are correct. Yeah, so I apologize for getting ahead of things.
Right.
So I see on the list of other entities that are on that property, the Pacific Wildlife Care and Marine Mammal Center and the Morro Bay Mutual Water Company. So I'm wondering if you have done outreach to those. I'm particularly interested in the not-for-profits there, the Marine Mammal Center.
Yes.
I've been a volunteer for many years at Pacific Wildlife Care.
They do great work. I mean, that's a no-brainer. They do great work. I was out there a couple of weeks ago. Met Christine and talked with Dr. Bohm, although I haven't met him yet. We have been discussing with them the just a few years in advance here and about their future there. I don't want to get any further into that because we haven't quite run through that process yet, but we're talking with them.
Other questions?
Yes.
Marcus. And I've got some questions.
Yeah, Mark. Thanks, Chris. So I just need to say to begin with, I'm really, as Marilyn and Ellen have expressed, I'm really really excited about this becoming a battery storage facility, something that goes along with this board's belief in mitigating climate change. I do have a slight distrust of energy companies, so I actually went on to look up the individual board members and did a search for them, and lo and behold, all of them
all of them share our belief, and I'm very excited about that. It was very exciting. I don't know if the district was at the table at all or whether you've spoken to us individually. My understanding is we're probably one of the largest employers and probably one of the largest budgets in the community. So I'm not sure what role we've played so far. I'm really glad that you're here. So I guess just to begin some questions, have you granted some concessions or are you in negotiations with the city on concessions, like maybe redoing a park?
No.
Building in the city to help its structure?
No, but those discussions will be coming. You know, in California, you have, in projects like this, you have in law the ability to do a development agreement that often addresses these kinds of issues, and that's yet to come.
Okay, and so when that comes up, I guess you probably can see where I'm headed. When that does come up, I'm hoping that you'll come and visit at least with staff. And I know when Duke took over, they were very generous to the school district. I can remember playing basketball on at least one court with the Duke logo in the middle of it. So I'm just hoping that you might come speak with us as well. Chris, can I ask several questions at this point?
Yeah, of course.
Okay,
Chris,
sir. Thanks. Well, we're seated. There was something about safety within your report. I have a car. It's got a battery in it. I'm not too worried about the safety of it. Can you tell me what some of the concerns might be?
Yes. Sure. And these are well known that with lithium ion batteries, you have there are fire and electrical hazards. And I've seen a few questions that have been posed out there. And we're going to get more into this. And this will be something that will be addressed in detail through a public process, through the CEQA process, in which all this will be addressed. And there'll be a lot of opportunities for citizens to ask questions and provide their input about the overall safety. But I will say the one thing I have seen is about concern about fire at battery storage facilities. And most of those that people have Googled and looked at were battery incidents in compartments. This is not the same. This is, again, think data center, a large building. First of all, it will be built to meet or exceed the existing standard, which is the UL 9540 standard that has just gone through its second edition in 2018 that sets out standards that have been accepted internationally in the United States and Canada for battery energy storage systems. Also, UL 9540A, which is a fire test, rigorous fire test, if there's a configuration of the batteries within a building that might be closer than the basic standard, all right? So we will adhere to all that, plus California codes and the City of Morro Bay fire codes as well. But beyond that, what we will have are multiple layers of detection and multiple layers of sprinkler response. For example, these batteries are in modules about the size of your silverware drawer in your kitchen. There are 22 of those placed in a rack, okay? And the racks are set vertically in there. There are 2,400 racks per building. Well, what we have are multi-tiered detection systems. One is sampling the air at all times and a very precise way to detect whether there's carbon in the air or certain gases. If there is, it can identify down to the zone where it's coming from. At that point, the sprinkler system is essentially energized, charged with water, and then in each module, all 2,400, each module has a sprinkler head, its own. And so if the heat gets to a certain level, that sprinkler head breaks and then water goes into each module. Because the risk there is called fire propagation, spreading. A sprinkler system is very proactive in that it's going to not only reduce the heat, but extinguish the fire. Every single module has one of those.
Thank you.
We have a Moss Landing, I might add, also.
Thank you. So the reason I'm asking is because the high school's within fairly close proximity. I was worried about possible gases or something being released into the air and the necessity to have either additional equipment at the site or relook at our emergency response plans.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's just
sure
the
passive there'll be more. Side. Say it again.
And then we'll have the active side in which we will work with the Morro Bay Fire Department. There could be hydrants, standpipes, and all that as well. And they'll have all the requisite training and equipment to handle any propensity. But we, like I say, are going to build this thing to meet or exceed standards.
Right. And so,
it's safe, as I said in my presentation. Pardon me for
right. And that just made me think
safety
about
is,
what the possibility
safety is the
safety. And then just my last question now. The pictures of Moss, of the Moss Landing facility that are in the presentation attached below it, it's huge.
I mean, it is.
Okay, so is that a possibility sometime in the future that Morro Bay is going to resemble or grow to be Moss Landing, number two?
Oh, well, Moss Landing, we're into sustainability, and the key to sustainability is trying to minimize that interface between industry and nature. And so instead of going out and building another building, there was an old turbine building at Moss. Made of concrete, and so we said, well, let's reuse that. Let's repurpose it. So that's what the Moss Landing 300 megawatts ran. We had some space at that site to add, so we have a couple of new buildings in the back that people don't even see, which we're adding some additional. That actually CAISO, the California Independent System Operator who runs your grid, and the CPUC are asking us to build because they know they need the they know they need the power, right? The Morro Bay site is going to be contained just in that 22 acres. It's a good size for what we're doing, and we're going to keep it within those parameters.
Thank you very much. And your questions, your answers go right along with the concern that you've expressed for the environment. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm going to make this really quick. The words potential shallow groundwater contamination caught my eye, and we have schools on the coast, and I was wondering if you can just reassure us or prepare us for what that might mean.
Yes. First of all, let me say that the DTSC has come in. We did soil testing and then with certified engineers, and then we turned it over to DTSC and they evaluated. It's found no attenuation of a plume of groundwater. It was fuel oil. So stuff gets, at a power plant or any industrial site, especially for one that was built in the early 50s and operating from 55 to when environmental laws became enacted. They kind of did things a little loose at the axle. So there's going to be stuff in the ground there. There's no plume of groundwater there. The soil is, like I say, it's got some actionable levels of arsenic and petroleum hydrocarbons, but we don't think it's going to attenuate off the site at all. And that's a public report, too. I think that it is part of what the city has on its website for the MOU presentation, but it's also it's on the DTSC website as well.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, one of the things that my understanding how we've benefited from the taxes is something called the unitary tax, which relates to power that's actually sent over the high voltage lines in our area. Mm-hmm. And this may be a question for Mr. Pinkerton. Mr. Pinkerton, do we expect that we'll see any increases in our unitary tax based on this?
I think that's the assumption that Mr. Watts is making, but go ahead, Dr. Fair.
Well, I'm actually meeting with Mr. Watson next Thursday, He's going to be in town, so we're going to have a chance to meet each other in person. And it's curious because that's one of the questions I was going to have for him regarding the transmission rates from the unitary tax, which we have with Doble County. And I don't know what that would look like with regard to the battery storage facility. However, you know, I have my eyes on all kinds of possibilities in the next several years as they talk about other projects down the road. So I think Mr. Watson and I are going to have a lot to talk about.
I think that would be really interesting. It occurs to me that and I know, Mr. Watson, this isn't what your plans are at this point, but with the talk of offshore wind generation, transmission into our area from the offshore, I imagine that we should be in line to get some tax money from that, as well as, I don't know who owns the lines going out of there. I imagine it's PG&E. It's probably a piece of infrastructure they didn't want to particularly give up, and we'll be paying them for the transmission. But I think this is potentially going to be tax windfall for us as well as for the city of Morro Bay. The generation building, I think I must say that I'm excited about the possibility of raising the generation building, because it's really pretty darn ugly right now. And I know that will provide the city of Morro Bay, looking at your map of land restrictions, it doesn't look like that area has been restricted. But that area might be something that the city of Morro Bay can work on in terms of development too, which would benefit the city of Morro Bay. And then I was kind of curious about the intake building that's on the sort of the south side of the Embarcadero. There's a standalone building there. Are you guys taking that one down too?
That's not part of the MOU.
Okay, I'm just curious. All right. And then are you guys planning on doing tie-ins with the wind generation that's proposed off the coast?
That wouldn't be our call. You have obviously been well informed on and watching the ongoing public debate and excitement now, really, about the offshore wind advances that were announced recently by Governor Newsom and the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. Defense Department finally got on board that the two tie-ins, or the two switch yards, we call them, where you actually tie into the grid, are in Morro Bay, and the other one's at Diablo Canyon. That gives an opportunity for what I have heard described as the opportunity for Central Coast to become a renewable energy hub, right? You've got to have the wind out there, out in that sector, but you got to get it in to tie into the grid. So that Morro Bay substation would be part of that. Our facility is right next to it. So we don't have anything to do with that. The energy that would be generated by the wind turbines goes into the grid, and that's where we pull it off to store it. Because right now you have excess wind and especially solar during the day. If it's not used at that time, it's wasted. So this is an opportunity where you grab that off the grid, store it. Wind dies down, sun sets. That's when you expand the shoulders of what we call the generation day. With that.
I think it's a very exciting proposal. And as Mrs. Rogers said, I think our school district has made a commitment to the environment. And it seems to me to be one of those ways that we can help mitigate some of the damage caused by climate change. Is there anybody else from a group that would like to speak? Because we do have somebody who would like to make a public comment, although this is not an action item. I'll go to, I believe it's Chance Siri. Chance, are you there?
I'm here. Can you guys hear me okay?
Can you hang on just a sec, Chance, before you start? I'm going to get my timer ready and give you some.
Minutes.
Okay, Chance, your 3 minutes is beginning now.
All right. So good afternoon, everyone. Mr. Watson, I just really had two questions. One, you spoke earlier about, you know, the plant creating jobs. I was just curious, how many jobs do you expect to be created there? Are we talking about in the hundreds or thousands, or, you know, what's that footprint? And then also, you know, we talked about battery storage, and just wanted to find out your thoughts on the materials that are used to source those batteries. You know, are they done so in a kind of a sustainable or socially responsible way? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Regarding the jobs, the bulk of the jobs, Mr. Suri, are going to be during construction. There would probably be about 100 workers on site during the initial site work and preparation, maybe up to 300 or so. And this is in our permit that's online, it's public. About 300 or so during construction, then about 100 as we really begin to prepare the facility once it's installed to get in line to join the grid. As far as O&M jobs, operations, maintenance, there are about 15 full-time jobs. And that's very often disappointing to know when people think that there are a lot of people who are employed at power plants. That would certainly be true at Diablo Canyon, or it would be in a coal plant. But these newer renewable technologies are not labor-intensive like that. So there'll only be about 15 jobs or so, we would say. As far as the materials in the batteries, there are different kinds of minerals that are used: nickel, manganese, cobalt, that's what the batteries are in. They are sealed in pouches, we've been asked this question before: like, well, what if there's a tsunami? Well, first of all, there's that berm around the property. But even, you know, theoretically, if there were water coming in contact, they just don't work. They short out. So that's what is in them. And I will add that 95% of what's in these batteries are recyclable. Our contract with whatever vendor we end up choosing will contain, as part of the contract, that they will take them and they recycle them. They take them away. Because there have been a few questions in some forums we've had and questions we received about, well, is this going to impact our local landfills? No.
Any other questions from our board members?
Otherwise, I on behalf of the board, I want to thank you for taking your time to update us on this proposed facility at Morro Bay. I know it's about 8:45 there in Texas. So thank you very much. And we really appreciate it.
Thank you, President Unger and trustees, and Dr. Prayer, thank you for the opportunity. Hope you have a good evening.
We look forward to hearing more, and a great opportunity to help the financial situation of the district. And, you know, as I believe our Blue Ribbon Committee wanted us to be able to look at ways that we could create sustainable revenues for the district, and this certainly seems like it's one way can do that. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to item number 9.01, which is correspondence. Well, we did have several letters from people. We had Lena Egan, who wrote about the CVRA maps, orange-green versus orange-yellow maps. Mrs. Egan also wrote us about reimagined summer learning experiences for secondary, sort of a blog post. Colby Garris regarding racism, Maya Japp. I'm going to really butcher your name, and I'm really sorry. Daya Cody, racism. Kathy Ferrara on vaccine clinics. Michael Brakovic on vaccines. We now go to public comment. I'm going to read a statement regarding public comment, and we do have one written public comment at this time. So at this point in the agenda, the board welcomes comments on matters of district interest. The board will listen but cannot engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda. Generally, this section of the agenda is for individuals or representative of a group to address the board on issues not listed on the agenda.
Speakers who wish to discuss items on the agenda are requested to wait until that item comes before the board. However, comments may be given on agenda items at this time if it's not possible for a speaker to stay until the agenda item is served by the board. If you submit written comments on a topic, you will not be allowed to also speak on that topic. Comments or correspondence submitted anonymously will not be accepted. You can also contact us via the public comment request form, either prior to the meeting or while the meeting is in session, and that is on our website. If you wish to speak at the meeting, please click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and select raise your hand. When your name is called, you may restart your video if you wish and unmute your audio. If you need assistance with your video, please let us know and we'll attempt to fix it. If you have a problem with your audio, please click on the thumbs down icon and we'll attempt to assist you. All public comments will be listed to 3 minutes, a limit of approximately 450 words in written comment. Any portion of your comment extending past the 450-word limit may not be read aloud due to time restrictions. All written comments that are not read into the record will be made part of the meeting minutes, provided that such comments are received prior to the end of the meeting. Please be aware that written public comments, including your name, may become public information. Remember, there's no ceding of time, which means that you cannot give your 3 minutes up to add minutes onto someone else. Dr. Eisengrath Rogers will now read the public comment that was submitted prior to the start.
Public comment is from Nina Taylor Kobliska from Baywood PTA. I'm writing this letter to ask the school district to reconsider the decision to remove Maribel Chavez, Baywood's beloved counselor, to another school. Mrs. Chavez and her counseling program are an integral asset to Baywood students, parents, and staff. She has formed trusting and close ties with many of Baywood's families and students. She has built an essential program and earned the trust of Baywood School students by not only counseling, but also reaching out to the students on their birthdays, doing weekly check-ins with students and their families, and scheduling lunches and Zoom activities. I have talked to many families who utilized her program before the pandemic, during the pandemic, and heard exemplary comments. With the year that our community has had, Mrs. Chavez has played an important role in providing students and parents with mental and emotional support. Looking forward to next year and students hopefully returning to classroom full time, it seems that her relationships with students and knowledge of their needs will be irreplaceable. I feel that removing her would be detrimental to Baywood students and staff. Mrs. Chavez and her program are so important to our school that Baywood's 2021 SPSA plan has students' social emotional health and our school counselor as the first item in the culture of care section of the plan. When the Baywood community was asked to become a dual immersion school, the district emphasized that it would be a long-term commitment. We knew that meant Spanish-speaking teachers would have to be brought in. With the changes in teaching staff, Mrs. Chavez was considered a reliable and stable source of support for both English and Spanish-speaking families. I've talked to the staff at Baywood and have heard how many of our Spanish-speaking families appreciate that they can speak with her in their native language, with nothing lost in translation. The trust she has gained with her current students has been built over time. With the loss of Mrs. Stevens, losing Mrs. Chavez is another huge blow to Baywood students. We will need stability in the future, and Mrs. Chavez, along with the dedicated staff at Baywood, can provide that for the years ahead. With the unknowns of 2021-22 school year, students' social emotional well-being will be critical to a successful school year. I feel that Mrs. Chavez will be the best suited to counsel Baywood students and provide stability in their school day. Please find a way for Mrs. Chavez to remain Baywood's school counselor.
Thank you, Mrs. Kobliska. Going to turn, we have no other written public comments. Ms. Watson, is there anyone else who wishes to address the board? Okay, seeing no one. Bring it back to item number 10.01, business budget update.
Yeah, Just a quick shout out to our custodial crew, our grounds crew, and our maintenance crew for the graduations that they set up last week that I know a lot of your board members were attended. It's not all of them, but at least one of them, but a lot went into it this year, from lining out the fields to make sure everything looked good. I thought it was really nice for PV to have their graduation on site, in the back there. So just real positive. I heard great things from Dr. Prater and Kim about the ceremonies themselves. So I just wanted to, again, kudos to the whole team that makes those things happen, right? I was fortunate enough to go through the CPR training for the district last week. So we have AEDs on our sites. And so because of that, you have to have plans, you have to have safety teams, you have to have individuals that are CPR trained. So it was really good for me to go through the training and sit through it and hear from some of our staff about their, just things that they wondered about or concerns. So it was actually it was really good for me just to be there and listen to them so that then I can then go back with our principals and talk to them about, to make sure that they're emphasizing certain things about our safety plans and, where the AEDs are located, what they need to do, those types of things. So it was really good for me to be part of that. And then lastly, just the legislature passed the budget this week. It, met their constitutional guidelines, of course, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So the governor now is kind of the negotiation part. So they kind of passed the legislative law aspect of it, but so that they can get paid. But they still have a lot to do in terms of trailer bill language, those types of things. So really, it will be really interesting over the next 2 weeks to see what happens with transitional kindergarten and COLA and, are they going to pay down PERS and STIRS? Are they going to put money towards the unemployment percentage that rose dramatically over this time? So we'll see kind of how that goes and what happens, and I'll make sure that you're aware of those changes as they come through.
Thank you. And, I'm so glad to hear about the CPR. I know that AEDs. I know we had a robust discussion about that when I was working for the County Office of Education. We did place AEDs at all of our sites, and several years later, one of the staff members at the county office had a very serious heart attack, and the AED saved her life. That's any questions? Okay, let's move on to the Ed Services update. Raph, I think this is your last update for us. You have a few more items here, but give it to us.
Some last, yeah. We wrapped up the school year. Yeah, quite a school year, but I just applaud all of our staff members for really finishing strong in what, tends to be a difficult video out there. In what was a difficult school year. We had our administrator wrap up as well. Kudos to Dr. Prater, really had a good bow on that for administrators to come together and kind of wrap up some final things there. We do have summer school. Instructional services and student services have worked incredibly hard to prepare for that. Over 600 students will be involved, over 53 teachers. There are 73 different enrichment activities, which I thought was really, kind of inspiring to hear. I know you've heard some about summer experience and where, we're hoping to go with summer opportunities. And kudos to people that were able to kind of bring some of those enrichment opportunities available even through this summer. You should see the amount of prep that took place. Over 5,000 books have been, sorted, given to sites, ready to create good experiences for kids. So great to see that happening. As you know, one of the focus areas for next year, multi-tiered system of support. You're going to hear a lot about that, MTSS. Laura Storm got started with the MTSS teachers and the principal reps from those school sites, kind of started with looking at what is MTSS, why we need to do it, started kind of creating that focus on beginning to talk about the how. Obviously, a lot more work needs to be done around the how of that, but great to see that started as before people kind of head off to take a little breather so that it creates a focus and a prioritization so they can be really productive in the fall. Lots of planning going on underway for August professional development. Lots of great things happening there. First of all, kind of looking at some of the silver linings, that there were some positives that came out of this, interesting year that we can learn from. And so holding on to some of that, as well as really looking at how we can focus on learning leaps and make sure that we are moving students forward and get them caught up and accelerated to where they need to be. And then finally, I know we've talked about this before, but just looking forward to a full in-person start for the fall. So really excited about that. It kind of, blends over into the COVID update that, as a county, we're in the yellow tier, although you'll, I think, see the tiers disappearing here pretty soon. We've had incredibly low rates within the county, really low rates within our school district. I would say, again, kudos to our staff that really followed through with protocols and, kept those transmission rates. The transmission at schools just didn't hardly happen. So that's because of dedicated people that, took a lot of steps above and beyond to make sure to follow through with that. It's kind of interesting. There's kind of questions now, like where we are now, and we hear a lot of talk about what's happening in the public. We do have to remember that school guidance is different. Right. So even as we hear things changing in a restaurant or, when you're out in public, it is different for schools. So California Department of Public Health is still waiting for CDC guidance to give specific information about schools. There's been a couple of key pieces to think about. Testing, for example, if you're fully vaccinated, then you can be exempt from the asymptomatic kind of testing. We did get a little bit of progress kind of on mask, that K-12 is allowed to have mask off if they're outdoors, still need them indoors, need them on buses, and needed them, in more crowded spaces. So a little bit of progress there. It's likely that Cal OSHA may come out with some new practices here at the end of June. So we'll see if that has an impact on the schools and things happening during summer school. And you're right, Mr. Unger, it's my final board meeting. So I know I've said it before, but I just want to tell all of you how much I truly have appreciated this opportunity, how much I've learned from you. You're an incredible group of people that is focused on the right things for kids. And I have really learned a lot from you and appreciate being a part of it. I get to work with an incredible team of people like these people here and the other people in Ed Services and throughout this district. So just a quick thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and as you know, we're going to miss the heck out of you, but our loss will certainly be, I believe it's Reed School District's gain, and I know that when Dr. Eisenberg, Beth Rogers, and I were quizzed by the board members from your district, because it really is your district now, we knew that your experiences here would make them a great super. So we're very excited for you. So really want to wish you the best. I do have a question, kind of follow up though, for Mr. Pinkerton. So Mr. Pinkerton, given that that today was the day when California is supposed to free up, knowing though that mask requirements are still in force for indoor school events, do we know anything about transportation and busing yet?
So I think that'll probably come out with the school guidance as well. So, I mean, I do know that they have gone from 6 foot to 3 foot in terms of spacing. So it's less about the number of students on the bus, per se. It's that if somebody gets COVID and the quarantining that would have to take place. So that's more of the issue than actually filling the bus with students. So there are things that we can do then on our district side to facilitate that so that we can make sure that the students have an opportunity to get to school and ride the school bus. So we are planning as of now for full, having full routes, basically back to school full time, those types of things. So, unless it changes dramatically from what Mrs. McGrath said, in terms of school guidance that comes out, I think we can focus more on that if something happens in per se through so a student gets COVID. We can have, siblings sit together. We can have students have a seating chart on the bus. We can do a lot of things like that. That, then we can follow up with quarantine protocols if needed.
Other questions for Mr. Pinkerton? Anything else for Mrs. McGrath? Let's move on to our Measure D update. That would be item 10.
Yeah, so just so the board knows, we continue to meet Wednesday. Mr. Holcomb, myself, Mr. Bonin, our bond management team, going over the projects. We'll be going out, heading out, you know, observing projects, making sure that things are moving along quickly. We want to, of course, get as much work as we can during the summertime while students are gone on campus. So we have some projects at San Luis Obispo High School, some of the quad area there, you know, trying to get that set up so that when students come back, we have better passive travel for kids. Really excited about, again, Morro Bay High School, the quad being completed by the time kids get back. They'll be in the new classroom building there. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the fall and, you know, students having more opportunity to enjoy some of the Measure D work that's been done on both of our two comprehensive high school campuses. We did begin our facility master plan walks today. So I walked with PBK Architects. We walked the district office, BGT area. So they'll be going to every school in the district, basically two schools a day over the next 2 weeks. To put that facility master plan information together for the board, and we'll be sharing that with you.
And I just want to say that quad at Morro Bay High School really okay. It's 7 o'clock. Let's take about a 9-minute break until 7:10. We'll have a little recess and come back at about 9 minutes. .01 California Accountability System, School Dashboard Update, State and Local Indicators. Mr. Mayfield?
Yes, good evening, Mr. Unger, School Board. It's good to see everyone. Each year, we are required to bring the California School Dashboard Local Indicators in front of the board and the state indicators as well, but those are generated from testing data and come at a later date. We're required this year, even though the dashboard is temporarily suspended, to run those in front of the board and then load them to the dashboard in the fall. Mandy, if I could share my screen. Okay, and so again, these are the local indicators that we will be discussing here tonight. So basically, the California School Dashboard replaced the program improvement accountability measures that the state used to have under No Child Left Behind. It's intended to be used to identify strengths and weaknesses, but not to compare one school district to another. There are two different kinds of indicators, as I mentioned, local indicators, which we'll discuss tonight, and state indicators, which are based on attendance data and testing data through the SBAC. There's three categories within the local indicators of met, not met, or not met for two or more years. The local indicators are the following: fully credentialed teachers, proper instructional materials, and facilities in good repair. That's priority number one. Implementation of the academic standards, the California state standards, is priority two. Parent engagement is priority three. Four and five are state indicators. School climate is priority six. And then access to a broad course of study is priority number seven of the local indicators. So in priority number one, we use a tool provided by the California Department of Education to assess ourselves and where we are within this category. So in terms of appropriately assigned teachers, access to curriculum, clean and functioning school facilities, we met that criteria. And when you go through these tools, we're quite strong in all of these areas that I'll present to you tonight. In priority number two, the implementation of academic standards, for quite some time, we have been, of course, we adopted them many years back. Our instructional materials are aligned with those standards, and we support staff with the implementation of those standards. In terms of parent engagement, as all of you know, it's a priority of yours, of course, and all of us, and something that we constantly look at how to improve. I think this year, in spite of the difficulties that we faced, we did a pretty good job of reaching out and engaging our community in decisions that came in front of us and that we all had to deal with. So these would be groups like PTA, the District English Learner Advisory Committee, or DLAC, the District Title I Advisory Committee, or DTAC, and then other booster clubs. And in that category, we rated that we met the criteria. In terms of the school climate, the California Healthy Kids Survey is the metric that the state of California looks to. Of course, we also conduct the Youth Truth Survey every year. The California Healthy Kids Survey is every other year. We administer this assessment, analyze the results, and actively engage our students and faculty in setting goals and priorities at the school site based upon that feedback from students. And access to a broad course of study, you know, we've added courses over the last couple of years at the secondary level that would only enhance it, this particular area and priority. And then, you know, any issues that come up, of course, you know, we immediately get on those to make changes if those are required. And then, as I mentioned, the California School Dashboard is suspended currently. But this is a way that the public can access that once it comes back on online. And they do anticipate that that will occur in the fall, and the local indicators will have needed to be in front of the board at a regularly scheduled meeting. So that is it as far as indicators go. Are there any questions I can answer?
I know that this is a discussion item, but I will go to the public to see if there's anyone who would like to address the board on this item. Being none, no one, I'll bring it back to the board and see if board members have any questions about the local indicators. But Mrs. Frame.
Good evening, Mr. Mayfield. I just wanted to ask a quick question, and you may or may not know the answer, but given you know, the focus, money coming in and focus on learning recovery by the state, is there any indication from Sacramento that there will be any changes to the dashboard or...
Yeah, there has not to this point been any indication. There are a few things brewing out there, and as I said, it's suspended currently, and it should come back online in the fall, and we'll hear about those changes, I would guess, relatively soon.
Okay. Thank you. Just a question.
Thank you. Rick, thank you for this great information. I noticed that you referred to the CHICS, to the California Healthy Kids Survey. I'm wondering what modules we're using right now.
We did not administer the California Healthy Kids Survey this year. I believe last year was the year that it was implemented, and it will be again next year. I don't have that information right in front of me, Mr. Buckman, but I can certainly get it to you if you'd like.
And if that's okay with the rest of the board. And then do you know whether we're using the companion staff piece that goes sort of dovetails with that?
With the Youth Truth in particular, or the California Healthy
Kids? No, with the California Healthy Kids Survey.
Yeah, I do not, but I can certainly check on that.
Yeah.
Mr. Dowler is in charge of the California Healthy Kids Survey and administering that, and I would be happy to check with him and get some information on that
sure.
for the board.
If that's okay with Chris.
Well, you know, I was thinking I'd like to check with Dr. Prater about this because just knowing the modules doesn't help me very much. But having the modules mean something to me would be helpful. And so I think as we discuss social-emotional learning and the social-emotional pieces of the LCAP, it might be helpful for me, and I don't know how the rest of the board feels, to have a review of what the Healthy Kids Survey encompasses. Because I do know that you present the results. And I think, Mark, that's when I'd rather hear about something that is more about healthy. Does that sound dumb? That, first of all, I want to know if that's something the board would be acceptable to. No, I'm not asking for a presentation. What I'm saying is that typically we get a presentation regarding the results of the Healthy Kids Survey. And during the time of that presentation, what I'm suggesting is that would be a good time for us to know what different modules and students. Yeah, just kind of a standalone. Here's the modules. what I'm saying? Yes, it would be part of the presentation that we already do. Yes, that's right.
And I totally agree with that. I think though in preparation for giving the California Healthy Kids survey, there's the basic survey, and then there's a number of modules that can be chosen. One specifically that I know is LGBT, one on diversity. There's even one that asks kids, how often do your homework? Have you cheated in the last 2 years? There's a parent component and there's a staff component. So if the board was interested, we might be able to give some direction or at least get some feedback prior to the next administration.
I would not be in favor of that, because I feel like that is an administrative decision. We have given them direction. What kind of information we want them to focus on. So I think that is something that I would rather be
interested in. I don't know how the rest of the board is.
I would support Mr. Rogers. That we give the direction and then
clear about in terms of social emotional temperature taking.
Yeah, I can tell you that we did expand the modules the last time we implemented or offered the California Healthy Kids Survey. I suspect that we'll continue to do that because that's in alignment with our LCAP and goals and district priorities. It also aligns with the Youth Truth surveys that we send out as well. And last year we gave expanded the Youth Truth survey to include grades 3 to 12 as well as parents and staff. So we have a really nice baseline of information that we use to make sure that we have the necessary data to make good decisions. So I feel good about it, but I hear what you're saying, and I think we, as we prepare the Health and Kids Survey presentation next year, we'll bring that to the board so you can see what we're doing. That would be great.
Okay.
Don't think I went to the public on this. Okay. So go to the public to see if anyone has any comments about 11.01. Awesome. Public. All right, let's go on to item 11.02, Ag Career Technical Education Incentive Grants.
Yes, thank you. I don't have a lot to say about this. I know that you're used to seeing these, and you are in great support of career technical education. These two grants for the high school do help these programs and bring in additional funding to help support the expansion, modernization, and continued support for materials and supplies, field trips, et cetera, for these CTE programs. So tonight I would hope for your approval for these grants.
I'm going to go. This is an action item. I'll go to the public to see if the public has any comment about this. Okay, seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Yes, Mrs. Flynn.
Ms. McGrath, thank you. What I love about these programs is we have a core group of students that are really passionate about this program. It's like our athletics, our music, our drama. And this is just purely from my education. Can you just explain just a little bit, as I was looking it over, the matching versus incentive, and you know, the source of funding, just explanation from me.
Yeah, I do believe this one is a matching fund. So it just depends on the way that the State Department structures the different funds. Incentive grants do happen to be matching funds. I will tell you that we never have a problem matching because we have so many great CTE programs with teacher salaries, et cetera. We always have what we put in as a school district way above and beyond what the grant would require. Mm-hmm. So it's never an issue whatsoever for us to, you know, show the support for the matching funds within these kind of things. The second part of your question was matching or what was the second part you said?
Well, the matching is coming then from the district, and the grant is then coming from the
Correct.
Perfect. Thank you.
You bet.
Yes, Ms. Dobler-Drew.
Yeah, thanks. I love the career technical education opportunities that the kids have. And I was wondering if there were incentive grants in other career paths than agriculture.
Yeah, great question. We continually watch and monitor for what additional grants have become available and are available. Any CTE grant that we've had any sort of eligibility for, we have gone for. Liz Moore's done an amazing job at preparing for those and applying for them, and we often lead in receiving them. Mr. Pinkerton will tell you about how it's helped even facilities and helped us move forward with using equipment budgets and things wisely because of our ability to apply and receive grants.
Great. Glad to hear it. Thanks.
I just want to say, I think it's interesting. I couldn't open up the document. Well over 200 students at San Luis Obispo High School are involved in the agriculture program. I think it's over 250 students, actually. And 80 to 80 students at Morro Bay High School were also involved in the ag program. So we do have a strong interest in ag programs here, and that really, I believe, agriculture is the number one, the number one revenue source for the economy in San Luis Obispo County. I think it's probably agriculture and tourism. So this is hugely important for a lot of students. This is an action item, Mrs. Sheffer.
Yes, if there's no further discussion, I was going to make a motion.
And so we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mrs. Frame. Can I go to the public? Do I need to go to the public on this? Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this? Being no one, I'll bring it back. Any further discussion? Mrs. Sheffer? Frame?
Yes.
Dr. Mr. F. Rogers? And I'm a yes. 360. Move on to item number 11.03, approval of adult high school diploma credit reduction, also an action item. Mr. Mayfield?
Yes, thank you. The San Luis Obispo County Adult Education Consortium convened in an effort to streamline the process and get young adults into the workforce as efficiently as possible, voted to reduce the credit, the elective credit requirement by 20 elective credits to a total of 180 to graduate, to get a high school equivalency for graduation. And the second part is to require the JAIL program, San Luis Obispo County JAIL program, to be reduced to the California state minimum of 130 total credits for a diploma. And attached to this board item is a graphic outlining exactly what credits are required. This is, as I mentioned, part of the Adult Education Consortium, which would be every school district within the county of San Luis Obispo. And all districts are bringing this item in front of their board for approval.
I think I'll go to the public on this. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this? No one, I'll bring it back to the board, Mrs. Shepherd.
I just wanted to make the comment that I really appreciate that we are revising these credit requirements because I think that, that generally these students are folks who have had come up against and worked hard to overcome many obstacles in their lives, and anything we can do to kind of help them over this hurdle here, I am all in favor.
Maybe Ms. Shipper is going to make the motion. This is, and then I will make the motion. I too am very proud of this. So I will I move the approval of the San Luis Obispo Adult Education Consortium graduation credit reduction proposal.
Mr. Buckland, we have a motion for item 11.03, approval of adult high school diploma credit reduction by Dr. Rogers, second by Mr. Buckland. I just wanted to add something for the public. One thing people may not realize is that because the San Luis Obispo County Jail is within the boundaries of the school district, we provide educational services to the jail, and that we do provide adult education services and high school diploma equivalency. So that's something that I think many people realize, but that's those folks to educational opportunities is very incarcerated. Dr. Esbeth Rogers.
Hi.
Mr. Buckman. Mrs. Frame. Sheffer. Ms. Dobler Drew.
Yeah.
And I'm a yes. The motion carries 0. Item 11.04. Anatomy adoption recommendation. Mayfield?
Yes. So anatomy is a very popular elective at our high schools for 10th and 11th graders. And the curriculum was pretty outdated. The last adoption we did was in 2000 or 2001, I believe. And so we needed to update the curriculum. And I'll just share with you a brief presentation, if I could, tonight on the process that we followed for the anatomy adoption. And then ask for your recommendation. So we piloted two different curriculums, the Essentials of Human Anatomy, and then Hohl's Essentials of Human Anatomy and Physiology by McGraw-Hill. Sorry about that. And then the committee selected the textbook of Essentials of Human Anatomy and Physiology. It was for 11th and 12th grade anatomy elective course. And like I said, it's been one of the most popular electives, I think, of all the courses that students have to take. Everyone's interested in human anatomy. The pilot training took place before teachers used each curriculum, and then training for the new with the new publisher has been set up for next school year. They chose two curriculums, as I mentioned, to pilot. Teachers worked together as they taught both curriculums and collaborated and shared out. And there are also tools that they complete as they go through this process to make sure we're, you know, looking at all aspects of a particular curriculum adoption. And then on the 21st of May, they selected the curriculum that's in front of you today. They were looking for updated materials, a digital interface like the one students will encounter in college, and then a test bank with a lot more items. And you can see there on the right-hand side, you know, the endless options for the test bank were one of the highlights for the teachers. The digital interface was as well. And you know, this will be an in-person class, but there are still options for using the digital interface of the program. And it's customizable, shareable, and flexible. Materials would be about 55 books for each of our two comprehensive high schools and digital licenses for each student. And the costs you can see there on the right, a total of approximately $37,500 for this particular adoption to bring our anatomy curriculum up to date.
All right, so I'm going to go to the public to see if the public has any input on item number 11.04, anatomy adoption recommendations. Bring one from the public that would like to address the board. If no one, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Or motion, or both.
I was looking at some samples from the curriculum online from the textbooks, and I was very impressed by the quality of the graphics and the labeling process for each one and the amount of detail that has gone into the preparation of it. It looks very high quality. I just want to make a statement.
I'd like to make a motion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we adopt agenda item 11.04, anatomy adoption recommendation for 11th and 12th grades.
Jeff, are you seconding that? I see the board has no bones to pick with this curriculum recommendation, so I'll bring it back for a vote.
Ms. Dolber-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Sheffer? Buckman?
Seeing as we only have a skeleton school board.
Dr. Eisenbrath-Rogers? Ms. Frame? And I'm a yes. Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you.
Item 11.05, Bellevue Santa Fe, Memorandum of Understanding Amendment for Increased Fiscal Services. Against action item, Pinkerton?
Yeah, actually, Mrs. Eklund's going to speak to this tonight.
Hello, Mrs. Eklund.
Hello. Yes, so Julie Turk, the principal for Bellevue Santa Fe, informed us in the county office that Joni, their bookkeeper, would be retiring and asked if we'd be interested in assisting with the fiscal aspects for Bellevue Santa Fe. And so we came up with an MOU agreement. You can see the amendment to the MOU, outlining the fiscal services that we would continue, or we would be providing that are new. We currently do their payroll, a handful of invoices, and some deposits that go directly to the COE. And we would just be adding budget and interims. I'd be working with Julie, and we would get those into the SACS documents and present to their board.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Someone like to make the motion?
Adoption. Mr. Pinkerton pointed out that it is part of the district's relationship with Bellevue Santa Fe to be aware of their fiscal standing and practices. So this fits right in. I didn't vote on this. So with that, I would love the amended MOU with Bellevue Santa Fe.
Did I go to the public? I did not. I did go to the public, or I didn't. This is Dawson. Did I go to the public?
Mandy's always right.
You know what? I'm going to go to the public. Thank you. Is there anybody from the public? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. So we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Dr. Eisenbrath-Rogers. Any further board discussion? Okay. Mrs. Frame?
Dr. Eisenbrath-Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Sheffer? Mrs. Dolber-Drew?
Yes.
Motion carries 6-0. Let's go to item 11.06, proposed revisions to board policy 4030, non-discrimination in employment.
Thank you. Tonight we have before you a few board policies. So this one here, 4030, is looking at all personnel and non-discrimination employment. It did go through our typical process, including the board subcommittee. Notice the kind of inclusion there of job applicants, persons who are contracted with the district to provide services, kind of expands this. So you'll see the additions there from the subcommittee as well as the directors, and it's a first reading. I would recommend to come back for a second.
Anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this? The board's consensus, we bring this back for a second reading. Item 11.07, proposed provisions to board policy 4040, employee responsible use of technology. Ms. McGrath.
Thank you. This is a policy we've had in place, obviously, and have, it's become tremendously important over time. And, you know, emphasizes that employees being responsible for the appropriate use of technology and using the district's technology primarily for purposes of their employment. Just defines that a little further in your expectations. So as a first reading as well, this did go through our process as well as your board subcommittee, and I would recommend that it comes back for a second.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address them? Okay, let's go on. The board's consensus that we, yes, let's go over here.
As I looked over this policy, that it talked about prurient harmful matter, but there's no explicit reference to violence, just Koreans. And I just thought we could add that because there's a lot of violence. Hopefully it's in the past, but there has been a lot of violence in our society over the past year. And so just thought we could add that instead of. So in other words, the level of violence as depicted in, say, a video that a teacher is displaying, does that have no limits? I know there's some specific things that shall not promote any activity that is prohibited by law. Well, of course, violence is prohibited by law, but we have it anyway. I mean, so if you see what I'm saying, I'd just love to see the level of violence looked at as well as the level of prurience.
Could I make a recommendation?
Sure.
That go back to the board subcommittee for a discussion of insertion that could mean. I'm thinking, I understand what you're saying about violence. I'm not sure, for example, if a depiction of World War II would be vile. So I would love to have the board subcommittee bring it back for the discussion.
Right, and just two more examples of that, like the level of how graphic you get on that, because even in Hollywood, they use, you know, violence as a rating indicator in addition to the prurience. So, wait, there's just one other point I was trying to make. So it's also now violence can be used to back up the very current topic of, you know, racial discrimination and actions of the past and showing one group being violent to the other group and that kind of thing. So I'm particularly sensitive to what the teachers may have access to and may give their children access to, and also the appropriateness of the age level. Wow. That's also mentioned in here that it's not supposed to be, the teacher's supposed to judge what is the appropriate amount of violence or prurience for their age level. So we're just leaving it all up to them, I guess.
I think I'd like for them to bring it back. And this may, some of the things you're talking about too may be covered in the administration.
Good. I look forward to rediscovering it.
Well, if there's no rush on that, let's do that. I don't think I went to the public on this. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on this? No one? Okay, so we'll refer this back to the subcommittee. 11.08, revisions to board policy 4112.2, certification.
Great. You'll see the red legal updates there about that we shall make reasonable efforts to look for fully prepared, credentialed employees, of course. And then you'll notice some updates on the back. As a first reading, I would suggest you bring this back for a second.
Anyone from the public that would like to address this? Okay, I'll bring it back. Just the board, is there a consensus? They will bring us back for a second meeting. 11.09, proposed revisions to board policy 4119.11, 4219.11, 4319.11, sexual harassment, first reading.
Thank you. Yes, you'll see again legal updates there in red. This did go through our process. And you'll notice some of the items the subcommittee's great about when it gets too specific, that it's better suited for administrative regulation. Again, as a first reading, I would suggest it come back for a second.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this? No one? Consensus would bring this back for a second. Eleven point 10, proposed revisions to board policy 4151, 4251, 4351, employee compensation, first reading.
Great. This policy policy updated here. You can see a lot of red legal updates as well. It does look at securing and retaining staff that are committed to student learning, and really looks at placing people on the salary schedule. And obviously, I know as a board, you're very committed to attracting and retaining the very best. So again, first reading here, and I would suggest to come back for a second.
Is there anybody from the public? And I did have, I believe this was the one I had a question for you on, was the question I had was, the board policy refers to 40-hour, 8-hour per day weeks, and I wanted to know how we accommodated our summer program, which is 4-10s, and McGrath, if you'd like to explain that.
Yes, there is specific ed code that allows us to provide different hours when it's voluntary and agreed upon that they would choose different hours to work with it.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this? Is the board's say that we bring this back to the meeting? On action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like something pulled. Item 12.01, approval of minutes, June 1st, 2021. 11.02, approval of minutes, June 7th, 2021. 12.03, approval of minutes, June 10th, 2021. 12.04, acceptance of donations. 12.05, approval of certificated classified personnel items. 12.06, proposal of surplus. 12.07, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 12.08, approval of 2021-22 Resolute Associates LLC contract agreements. 12.09, authorization for records destruction. 12.10, approval of new position development engagement coordinator. 12.11, approval of new position, central kitchen supervisor. 12.12, proposed revisions to board policy 4157, 4257, 4357, employee safety second reading. 12.13, proposed revisions to board policy 4119.25, 4219.25, 4319.25, political activities, employee second reading. 12.14, proposed new board policy 6159, individualized education program, second reading. 12.15, proposed revisions, board policy 6179, supplemental instruction, second reading.
Could I ask you to pull one?
Which one do you want to pull?
12.08, resolute.
12.08. Resolute, got it. Okay, so someone like to make a motion for 12.01 to 12.07 and 12.09 to 12.15. Moved by Mrs. Sheffer, seconded by Mr. Buckman. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on the consent agenda? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Sheffer? Ms. Gilbert-Drew?
Yes.
Buckman? Others, frame. I'm a yes. Motion carries 6-0. Back to you, Ms. Dobler-Drew. Item 12.08.
As I looked over what the Resolute Associates are responsible for, I was trying to determine. So maybe I just have a clarification question. These are protocols, safety protocols for public health, that are separate from the vaccination clinics, but I understand they work with public health that has got the vaccination clinics. But in other words, so the Resolute is not running the vaccination clinics, is that correct?
So yeah, Resolute has nothing to do with public vaccination clinics.
Okay, good. I mean, thank you.
They do work with public health to get the updates about COVID and what's happening and restrictions that school districts have to face. So they do work with public health and getting that guidance and talking to them, discussing, you know, kind of what we're supposed to do, follow their guidance. And then they share that with us.
Okay, but public health is the one that makes the decisions
about whether they're going to utilize the campus for...
No, that's up to us.
Okay. I'm a little bit clearer. Thank you. I think it's good now.
Would you like to make that motion? Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Fryman.
The proposed scope of work emergency operations plan. I think there was a typo. It had in there the following works proposed 2021 to 2021 school year. And then, so the end dates were 2021 to 2022, but then the school year was.
It should be 2021 to 2022.
Okay. Thank you.
This is for next direction. Absolutely.
Okay, so. Eve, would you like to go ahead and...
Okay, I make a motion to approve agenda item 12.08, the approval of the 2021 to 2022 Resolute Associates LLC contract agreements.
Second by Dr. Isaac Rath Rogers. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on this? Being no one, I'll get back to the board. Mrs. Frame? Jeff Rogers? Buckman? Jeffer? Ms. Gilbert-Drew?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries 6-0. I'm a yes. Item number 12. Yes, we did. Okay. Let's move to item 13.02, advanced agenda. So I'd like to... Go to item 14.01, reports by board members. Last week. What they did. Overdrew.
Oh, I just enjoyed the three high school graduations so much. And being there with everybody here, the collegiate, all of the other and everything. At Pacific Beach especially, we saw that there are many graduates that might not have done it. As they were saying, as their mentors were saying, that some of them just had to get back in person and have that human-to-human contact and that kind of encouragement. So isn't it wonderful we were able to open the schools early in March so that we had a lot more graduates than we would have had otherwise.
You know, I just wanted to say it's always a joy to attend our high school graduation ceremonies. But this year, you just felt like everyone had. I was in attendance at all three high schools, and at each place, I felt this everyone like waiting to exhale, and then the moment it was like throw up your cap, and you can breathe again. Yeah. So it was very celebratory and totally enjoyable as always. But
I guess. I'd like to give, I loved going to all the high school graduations. I think this is one of the things that is a moment of joy for school board members to see the success of our students. I'd particularly like to draw the attention to San Luis Obispo High School. A couple of things there that I'd like to talk about. The first is I appreciated Ben Jackson's comments on how surfing can be applicable to your life. Ben was our high school representative here on the board, and great to hear what Ben had to say, and I think it was wise language. The school then had student speakers, and they had two student speakers, one who gave her speech in English and talked about the importance of the AVID program, and then the other who gave the same speech in Spanish. Talked about the challenges that they both had had navigating their journey. And then, of course, Mr. and Earl Connor's speech from his heart, it's on his sleeve, committed to our schools, he's committed to our students, committed to excellence. San Luis Obispo High School,
I know that you'll really be great at it. So particular attention to them, and then of course Morbi High is just great. Have a lot of Sun School. But to them, it's miserable. But if we get a chance to hear the stories of the students at Pacific Beach High School and the opportunity to really graduate with not just have unlocked my kudos to staff. So our next meeting is, I believe, July 15th, discussing our proposed mission, vision. See everybody then. Have a happy summer. Meeting is adjourned.
Recording stopped.